Chapter 18. When Tao was neglected, humanism and justice appeared. If one has some knowledge of the universal doctrine, the reason for the confusion and degeneracy of humankind is certainly no mystery. When a new human epoch begins at the dawn of a new day of manifestation and all microcosms receive a wealth of new possibilities for resurrection, the opportunity for liberation is open to all. But that opportunity does not stay open indefinitely. Such a thing is simply impossible in a dialectical dispensation. That is why every day of manifestation follows a set pattern, beginning with a period of birth and growth, followed by a period of maturity, and ending with a period of dissolution and death. As this pattern unfolds, the racial body becomes increasingly dense, and a state of maximum separation is reached. As we explained in the last chapter, the gnosis, Tao, comes to young humankind at the dawn of a cosmic day and remains with it for as long as possible in an attempt to liberate as many microcosms as possible, as quickly as possible. And the harvest is indeed great, but for those who remain behind, the tragic moment of parting occurs. That moment now lies behind us and our fellow human beings. We belong to the residue, to those who, until now, did not want to follow the path of liberation. At the time of that separation, one last remedy was entrusted to the spiritual schools of the Sevenfold World Brotherhood. We prefer not to say any more about the tragic decline of the hierarchical priesthoods. But even with the greatest optimism, it could not be said that any more than a very small percentage of humankind was ready to receive this help offered by the spiritual schools, because only a few were capable of showing even a glimmer of reaction to the magnetic radiations of the gnosis. For the rest, after a period of neglecting Tao, came a total, fundamental rupture with Tao. It would be understating the truth, though, if we were not to say that in the great majority of human beings there are still elements present that clearly show they are called to a better fate and a higher good. A neglected true-bred dog may look terrible, but you can still see its pedigree, its ancestry, and the same applies to humankind. The rose of the heart speaks within the human being, and its presence is evident, even though one may give expression to it only in a very negative and caricatural way. Humankind shows its pedigree, its royal descent. But the tragedy of it all is shown clearly in an image Johann Valentin Andreae uses in his alchemical Wedding of Christian Rosicross. He shows humanity imprisoned in a dark dungeon in which everyone is busy blaming everyone else for the darkness, their misery, and their shackles. People quarrel and fight, but at the same time, they are doing their best to restore order and improve things both in theory and in practice. They do not succeed, their efforts are ineffective, but at the same time, very understandable. That is why Lao Tzu says, "When Tao was neglected, humanism and justice appeared." Did you know that the history of humanism as we know it today goes back 400 years? In 1953, a Congress on Humanism was held in Geneva, in memory of the fact that there, 400 years ago, Michel Servet was burnt at the stake at the instigation of Calvin. At the time, this led to a tremendous humanistic protest instigated by Castellio, and ever since then, humanism has grown and set its mark on our civilization. Humanists give their utmost for their cause, and indeed, where would we be without humanism and human justice? But if one considers humanity's hellish decline in the light of all these efforts, the extent of it becomes even more evident. We have had 400 years of humanism, but we have also had 400 years of suffering and misery, the most terrible wars and destruction, a frenzy of murder and slaughter, with a tiny sprinkling of humanism and justice to sweeten the brew of blood and tears. It seems that the human being has a dual nature. Potentially he is a god, yet at the same time he is a devil. So the tangled, writhing tumult of human life in the dungeon goes on. What an awful predicament. So is there any point in humanism? Should we stop being humanistic? Well, if the urge to love humanity is present within you, you can't, and you shouldn't, switch it off, but you should realize that the ordinary humanistic methods of expressing that love will never be able to provide a final solution to human suffering. What about justice then? Shouldn't we strive for what is right? But what is right for the writhing, tangled mass of humanity in this dark dungeon? What is good for one can be vastly different from what is good for another, and, all too often, those who campaign for some social improvement or other have their own vested interests at heart. Surely you have noticed how easy it is for people to become hypocrites in the name of justice. That is why Lao Tzu says, when acumen and shrewdness appeared, great hypocrisy developed. You have interests on the horizontal level. You have your duties and your obligations, your concerns, and your need to support yourself. As a result, you are bound to have developed a certain measure of acumen and discernment. You use carefully planned tactics to achieve your aims, and one of those tactics will be to try to get justice on your side, but then it will not be for the sake of justice itself, but only to protect your own personal interests, and that is hypocrisy. All kinds of confusions arise and situations become more and more complex. If one sees humankind's political struggles in the light of the Tao Te Ching, one is bound to feel revolted by them. In politics and economics, people lie and deceive intentionally, and in the dungeon of our society, all we can do is watch while our leaders continue with their mutual backstabbing and backbiting. It can hardly be said that the great human family lives in harmony. Far from it. It is a terrible situation. But even in the face of all this, humankind does not deny its high origin. The great human family is not in harmony. You know that. You experience that. But still, when the family no longer lived in harmony, parental and filial love came into being. Like little islands in a raging sea, there are thousands of families in which all is peace and contentment. There are plenty of exceptions to this, of course, but even then, parental and filial love still exist. Is that kind of love wrong then? Not at all. Let the peace of your family life and the love between parents and children be a comfort to you. It is perhaps your only point of rest amid the storm of life. But do not overestimate the quality of all this, for does your heart beat equally lovingly for the family of your neighbor? Our homes are piled on top of each other and next to each other like bird cages. In many cages, there is a great deal of harmonious chirping. Nevertheless, all the inhabitants are party to the conflict in the dungeon. Sometimes, community leaders hold up the nobility of family life as the cork on which our society floats. They are right, for it is a life jacket that saves us from drowning, but do not idealize it, for it is only a sad remnant, a faint glimmer of the original life with Tao. As with the family, so it is with nations. Each nation is a family on a larger scale. There are lots of nations on Earth into which the original family of humankind has been fragmented. There are all kinds of goings on in these families, and sometimes they fight with each other. But even so, in the lives of all those nation families, something of divine nature still survives. Feelings of patriotism, for instance. Whether or not you personally have these feelings and how you experience them does not affect the point we are trying to make. We are only trying to show that such feelings are alive in every nation. No person on earth is totally unaffected by the psyche of the nation to which he belongs, because such effects are rooted in the blood, and we know to what results patriotic feelings can lead, even though they can be thought of as good qualities, as sparks of the original life. So we can easily understand Lao Tzu when he says, "When the provinces of the kingdom were in confusion, faithful subjects appeared." There is no need for us to illustrate this point. You can refer to your own experiences, and when you search your own heart in the light of what is expected of you as a pupil of the spiritual school, you will have to admit that there is a great deal left for you to do before you can say you have freed yourself from delusion. For surely it is delusion to content yourself with caricatural reflections of the light. Surely it would be much better to seek the light itself. What you need, surely, is to return to Tao while you still have the chance. You have heard the calling voice of the spiritual school, and you have heard about what will serve your eternal peace. As you have responded to that call, what matters now is what you do about it. It is staggering to think that the Tao Te Ching was brought to humanity at least 600 years before Christ, and in our opinion, it is several thousand years older than that. In a way, then, we can hardly call ourselves pioneers. We are more like laggards. So, laggards that we are, let us go forward while there is still time. Let us leave the dungeon and enter into freedom through soul rebirth. Being Tao, one is everlasting. Even though the body dies, there are no more perils to be feared.